Good morning. Today is Monday, May the 1st. Joining us this morning out of the Eureka Police Department is not the guy that you thought that you might hear. Oh, we've upgraded. Patrick O'Neill, who's one of the detectives at Eureka PD, is with us this morning. Inappropriately dressed.
It's appropriate dressed, depending on what your outlook is.
Yeah, yeah. He's wearing blue. It could be Warrior blue, but no, it's that Los Angeles team's blue. So we'll just kind of leave it like that because we don't have to start off on that kind of relationship. Our quote this morning. Oh, let's see if we can find one. Lily Tomlin. It's easy to read. Just remember, we're all in this alone. Okay. It doesn't have to be heavy. It's May Day. Who cares, right? Yay! Now, as long as the weatherman understands this.
Exactly.
Troy. Patrick, what is one of the biggest challenges that detectives have in doing the job? Not even necessarily here or EPD, but across the board. What are the common pains?
I think the biggest challenge right now for across the board is just basically workload. You've got detectives that, you know, all law enforcement wants to do their job. They want to do it effectively, and they want to keep the public safe. But when your workload is so heavy that you've got 10, 15 cases you're working at the same time, you're so thin, you try and give as much as you can to each case because those victims deserve your best efforts. But at the same time, you can only give so much because you have so much work to do.
Would an analogy be trying to do 15 puzzles at the same time and spending 5 minutes on each one?
Yeah, or herding cats a lot
okay.
of the time.
Well, cats you can lasso. And I'm a cat fan, so take it easy, folks. But yeah, what is normal? What is ideal?
Ideal would be to be able to, I mean, in a perfect world, to be able to work a case and be able to give it all of your effort until you solve it or get to a point where you can't move any farther forward on it. We just don't have that luxury because, you know, the cases come in every day. I've got four detectives and then myself as a supervisor. And then we've got cases coming in and I'm farming them out to my staff and myself. But once again, you've got 10, 15 on your desk, and you're trying to give it all you've got, but you just kind of, I got the lead on this one. You got to put the others on the back burner and do what you can, and then move back and forth.
So they're like 50 active cases, 50 to 60?
They're right now probably close to that, and then there's some right now that are waiting for us to be able to have time to move on it.
In the holding pen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have to prioritize. I mean, violent crimes, those kind of cases need to take priority. So when we have financial crimes, you know, the good thing about financial crimes is like embezzlements and things are, they can wait.
It's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us, Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Patrick O'Neill. Sergeant O'Neill from EPD. You know, you don't have the stripes. It's tough to remember these kinds of things.
I don't wear them all the time.
Yeah.
When I'm off duty, it's the Dodger blue.
Oh. He brought you in off duty?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was an office day.
No.
Oh, okay. Do you guys do undercover work?
We do some, not so much like you see on TV, more of like surveillance stuff.
Just monitoring?
Yeah.
I've always thought that would be really tough in a small town with a small number of force and a relatively small number of bad guys. Just as you recognize them by sight, they'd be able to recognize you by sight pretty quickly. And the whole costume thing would be a little bit more difficult to pull off.
It's not as hard as you would think, because people see the uniform, they don't see the face. I mean, I've been doing this job for 23 years now, and I'll be at Winco or wherever and shopping, and you know, some people recognize me, some people will walk right by. They just don't, they're not used to not seeing that uniform. So when I was a drug task force agent, I did some undercover stuff, and nobody ever really recognized me. But once again, I'm not in a uniform, and I'm a little hairier. So
now or then?
There.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, beard and
yeah, we all kind of evolved, don't we? Yeah. what's the most disturbing thing for you? If challenge is caseload, what's the most disturbing thing about being a detective?
It's those, really, the crime scenes that you go to, there are, you know, there's a lot of, you know, victims that have been severely injured, especially children. It's the things that you see that's hard to unsee. You go home at night and, you know, you bathe your son, or, you know, I've got a 22-month-old at home, and
I was hoping it was a 22-year-old.
No,
that would
be a
whole different. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, going home after, you know, working a case when an infant has been abused, and then going home and, you know, taking care of your own infant, it's hard to turn that light switch off.
Coping skills?
You learn them quick. You find outlets that, you know, family and doing stuff and baseball and that kind of stuff. Sitting around, I've got, like I say, my 22-month is a big Dodger fan too, so we sit and watch the game. And
it's a multi-generational issue in the home, huh?
He cheers. Okay. There's a home run hit. He goes crazy. It's fun. It makes it easier to do something mindless for a while.
Normal stuff.
Exactly.
Normal people things. Yeah.
Exactly.
Has Hollywood made it more difficult to be a detective, or has it made it easier to be a detective?
I think it's made it a little more difficult in the fact that some of the things, technology-wise, DNA, the evidence stuff that we go looking for, you know, people watch CSI or those type of shows, and they get tips on how to clean up. Some of it's not really, you know, authentic, but some of it, I think it puts to that mindset of, you know, okay, this is what the cops show. That's what I saw. They look for. This is the evidence they're looking for, and they try and clean up a little bit.
So the bad guys are using it to try to be creative.
It's an education for them. You know, they want to see, and they learn. You know, repeat offenders learn from their old cases. You know, my last case, I did a robbery, and this is how they caught me. I'm not going to make that mistake again. So. You know,
that's right. They don't have bad guy school, do they?
No, that's when they end up locked down for a while. They learn from each other. What got you caught this? What got you caught this? And they share notes.
I would think so. I can remember years ago, former chief saying, "Only the dumb ones get caught." And I always thought, yeah, that makes so much sense. Is it real?
To some degree, I wouldn't say the dumb ones. There's also the ones with ego, the ones that think that they're smarter than we are. And I'm not. Maybe they are, but they
talk about low hurdle.
Yeah, but they they get cocky and they start making mistakes because, you know, they just think they're gonna outsmart us. And, you know, I can't see every perspective. That's why I have a team of detectives, and we've got a big case we're working. We all bring a different perspective, and something that I may not have seen, one of my guys may go, "Hey, what about this?" And we'll work that angle. So, you know, you're working against a team. You're not working against one individual. You know, it's not a chess game.
Cyber crimes.
Mm-hmm.
A whole different level of issues coming into play. Do you and your folks specialize work those, or is that something you push into somebody at the county or push to somebody at the state who has the abilities and also the technologies to be in the resources to be able to really work those?
We'll work them, and then, but we use our resources. I mean, we work hand in hand with the FBI agents locally. They've got a lot of resources that we can draw from. If we start working a case and we start seeing them at an angle that we'd like to go, but we just don't have the skill level for that, we'll draw from resources from the state and federals. And it's something that we tend to draw from often.
Is it as seamless as what we hear some of the MOUs working cross-departmental?
It is. I mean, especially locally, you know, we're a small community and there's, you know, we have investigator meetings once a week, so all the investigators in the county get together and the heads sit down, kind of work the cases.
It's 8:30.
Do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Patrick O'Neill, Detective Sergeant for Eureka Police Department. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Patrick, some of the different things that are out there. Is there a piece of gear? Let's let Chief Andy and the city manager quiver. Price, no object. That would make being a detective in our part of the world easier or more efficient?
I think really like the rapid DNA, being able to get our DNA returns a lot faster would be helpful. We get our returns fairly quick, but it's can be several months. So when we go to that burglary call and, you know, we find something that we think has left DNA behind and we take a sample and we send it off, if we can get that a little bit faster, it'd be a lot easier for us to move forward.
How many crimes are there that are unsolved, that you've got backlogs? And let's go all the way back. I mean, to the 30s, if you want to go back to the 30s. Is there any idea?
I couldn't even give you a ballpark. I mean, there's... I would say 40 or 50 or more, but once again, it's, you go back to the 30s or whatever, you know, where's your suspect? Is he even around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that there are some, at least in talking with folks over the years, you know who done it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't get that last 2% lockdown, or people have died, things have changed, so, you know, the white paper attached to the file. This is who did it, da-da-da-da-da. Here's why we couldn't finish it off.
Well, and, you know, especially the more recent cases or the ones, you know, 10, 15 years, 20 years old, you know, that we're still in contact with people. I'm still talking to family members. I just spoke to someone concerning a 20-year-old cold case last week. Just kind of keeping them in the loop. We are still working these. They're hard to work. You know, as the years go by, they're harder and harder to work because you've got, you know, where are your witnesses now? Have they moved on? Have people died? You know, that kind of thing. It's just trying to work the angles. And once again, like you say, we have ideas, but proving them is the problem.
With some of those older crimes that are unsolved, is it typically somebody saying something or a fatigue or somebody's will or... you find something in a goofy place. I'm sure there's places in the in our garage at home that I've not, we've been in the house, I think, 21 years or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, haven't looked at in 15, 18 years. Okay, fine. Well, someday, eventually, I have to probably pre-rummage sale. Mm-hmm. Be looking in the corners and stuff. Oh, gee, I remember this, forgot this. This is where it ended up, et cetera, et cetera. Do you get those types of things every once in a while, too?
It's sometimes we get breaks in cases. I mean, everything from, you know, people, suspects have died and people now come forward because there's either they're afraid or they were close or they were whatever. And now there's not that pressing, this person I'm not comfortable coming forward to, but now they're gone and there's no reason to hold that secret. There's remorse, suspects are getting closer and older and realize that they need to get this off their chest.
So that really does happen?
Oh, it does. Okay. I mean, it's some people just live their life with this, I need to do something, but they don't have the courage to come forward and say, I need to turn myself in or this is what happened or whatever. And then for whatever reason, all of a sudden one day they just go, today's the day I do it. And they come forward. It's family members come forward. Kids see something that their fathers or mothers or uncles did and they don't, doesn't click. And then one day they read an article or they see something and then they realize, I saw that. And they come forward. And the next thing you know, we've got this new angle that we didn't have before and we start running with it.
So some kind of like an outside triggering event. Mm-hmm. We'll do that.
You know, therapy sessions where people have gone to therapists and all of a sudden their memory gets less cloudy and they realize they saw something and this is why it's been bothering them all these years.
If you could choose one, is there one that stands out? If you go, that's one we want to solve. Whether it's from 75 years ago or last week, is there one that's just kind of, that's the one that you really want to figure out sometime before you hang it up?
Obviously, in a perfect world, I'd like to solve them all because there's victims out there that, and victims' families, and they deserve that closure. Karen Mitchell obviously is something that is just a mystery to us. We've worked it, and we're continually working it today. But there's not a lot to that. We'd love for that break to hit that we can actually go with it and figure out what happened.
Yeah, I would think that's probably the signature one for the last 25 years. Not that there aren't others just as heinous and just as disturbing, but mm-hmm. that seemed to be the one that garnered all the limelight for quite some time.
Well, that's, like I say, it's just a lot of the unknown on that one. It's just, it wasn't something that you could, this and this happened. It's, vanished, and then working the angles to figure out what happened.
KINS, News and Information Times, 842. We'll be back with more from Patrick O'Neill.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Patrick O'Neill. Patrick, what is, if you'd call down, and I know you've not been a detective all the time, but let's say it's been long enough to be able to answer the question. Lessons learned. What do you tell people? What do you tell your kids? What do you tell your buddies? What do you tell somebody new coming into this area of police science? What are the lessons learned about being a detective?
My biggest lesson learned is keep your mind open. Don't make a predetermined, okay, I think this person did it or this is what happened, because that's when you start making your worst mistakes, because you start crafting your investigation towards that predetermined thought. You need to just stay open and work every angle. The other side of it is don't be afraid to ask for other people's input, because their perceptions and the way they see a case is different from you, and they may bring something to light or an angle that you didn't think of. So, you know, don't let that ego get in your way.
Peers or just community folks?
It all depends. I mean, like, if I've got a computer crimes investigation I'm doing, and my detectives aren't familiar with, you know, this particular side of Facebook or Snapchat or whatever the case may be, then I'm going to go to my IT people. They're not detectives, but they sure as heck know that process and that system better than me. So I'm going to go to them and say, you know, teach me about this, and what does this do, and how do I manipulate this?
So using your resources.
Oh, exactly.
As much as anything. What about when you're not cop? You're either dad or, you know, in your area of leisure. What about lessons there? Or lessons that you've learned on the job that transfer into that setting?
Don't bring it home, you know, and make friends that aren't in law enforcement, because cops tend to talk about cop stuff all the time. So, you know, you're working cases, and it's hard to get away from the stress of work when that's all you're talking about is work, and, you know, all your friends are cops. You know, broaden your horizons a little bit as far as your relationships go, and, you know, listen to other things other than the work you do. I mean, the cop thing works good for me at home with the kids, because my son knows that he's not going to pull the wool over my eyes a lot. So it's useful there. But like I say, he gets it when I get home and I've had a bad day. We'll go out and throw the ball around or whatever the case may be. Just do really, you know, mindless stuff to kind of chill out for the day.
Unwind.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I suppose that is one of the biggest challenges for anybody in a stressful, you know, certainly, you know, we're not dodging bullets like you guys might, but how to just reset, find your bearings. Is that something that they teach now? Are they sharing that information with you?
It's been a long time since I've been through the academy. I think it's part of the academy, the whole, you know, mindsets and how to deal with the stress. There's courses that are part of that. When we do trainings, you know, how to de-escalate and how to, you know, make things normal when you get home.
Well, hopefully I have a normal this afternoon. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.